that?
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Radio theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. It is 11:07 here on a Saturday night. This is program 159 in the WGN Radio Theater series. To my right, the very vivacious, very blonde, very pretty Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa? How
well,
are you?
What an introduction. Thank you. Good to be here, Carl.
I'm working with two pretty ladies this evening because we have Lise Graham is our producer taking Elif's place tonight. And it's great to have you again, Lise. How are you?
It's good to be back. I'm great, thanks.
All
we
right.
always feel lucky when we have you with us.
I feel the same
You're
way.
You're a tremendous producer. tremendous. That's the word that everybody's using. Tremendous. You are tremendous.
And that's not a thing you want to say to a girl. You are tremendous.
She is tremendous. So on this edition, we have classic radio shows, three great shows. We have Suspense. Then it's Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. And then The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. All three of these radio shows brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming science fiction thriller Life, about a space station crew that may prove the existence of extraterrestrial life.
That's a lot of tongue twisting.
It's a lot of words there.
All right.
And if you guess it correctly, you will win a $25 gift certificate for Lumel Nauties.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of 2014's Nightcrawler.
Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. I'm a hard worker. I set high goals. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?
No.
Did you see this movie, Lisa? Nightcrawler?
I didn't see it,
oh,
no.
Oh, my God.
It sounds really good.
It's a great movie. All right. Who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. This is show number 159 in our series. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
Excuse me, sir. I'm looking for a job. I'm a hard worker. I set high goals. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. So what do you say? I could start tomorrow, or even why not tonight?
No.
And what do you say? We've got Ryan on the line from Hobart, Indiana. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Another night.
It could be better, right?
Oh, it could be warmer.
Could be worse. That's for certain.
Oh, yeah.
So who is that actor? Do you know?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal is exactly right. You are a winner, and we are so thrilled to give you a Lumel Nauties gift certificate. It's for $25, and they are home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, my very favorite pizza, and you can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at lumelnauties.com, and we're so happy that you won and that you're listening into our show tonight.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much. We'll hope you stay with us.
Thanks, Ryan. All right, buddy. He's a winner. He's going to have a Lumel Nauties pizza.
And you're a winner, Carl.
You know what? I ordered a Lumel Nauties pizza for my son today.
I order Lumel Nauties all the time, and I've never had a gift certificate.
My son, he's addicted to Lumel Nauties.
Well, I get it. Maybe Ryan will share with us.
All right. Well, it's time for our first classic radio show. It's Suspense, a terrific mystery series. Came to CBS Radio in 1942, lasted all the way to 1962. It was considered really the best mystery drama series of the golden age of radio. We air a lot of them for that very reason. It was billed as radio's outstanding theater of thrills, very suspenseful thrillers. It had the biggest names in Hollywood as the guest stars. On this very episode, we have Charles Laughton and a program called De Mortuis, and it's from February 10th, 1949. Here's part one of Suspense.
And now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you Charles Laughton in De Mortuis, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder. And now, Autolite presents Charles Laughton in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Now a bit more there. A touch of smoothing here. And that's a job well done. It's not a bad job for the village medico. I don't think a mason could have done better. Until the concrete hardens, I better...
Someone here. Nobody goes out and leaves the house open.
Oh, Doctor Wood, he trusts people. Oh, we better give it up, George.
You'd think Irene would be about.
She ought to be, by the looks of things.
But she's a bad one. I saw her again only last night with that commercial traveler.
Shh, George. Doctor might be downstairs. The cellar door is open. You think it rude? Doctor!
There you are. Didn't you hear us?
I thought I heard someone. I wasn't sure.
Well, we were going out after some partridge, and I thought you'd like to come along. We wouldn't have come in the house, only George thought that seeing as the door was open and all, that someone was home.
Aye.
So we walked in, and then I saw the cellar door open, and down we came. Where's Irene?
Irene? Oh, she's gone visiting.
Oh, well, then let's go shooting. Wet concrete. Going in for a bit of masonry, Doc?
There's been some water seeping up through this floor. It's an underground spring, perhaps.
Underground spring? Why, Doc, I sold you this house, but I never heard of a spring beneath it.
Doc, it looks as though Greg built you. It did.
Not Doc, I didn't. You know, when he came up from London a year ago, I could tell right away that he was a fine fella. When he and Irene wanted to get married, I sold him the best house in the village.
Now, maybe it was only the rains, Greg.
Well, I don't know. You certainly went deep enough, Doc. Hey, see, you got a bit of clay on your shovel.
That's 4 feet down, the clay.
18 inches, George.
Not according to the maps. At 4 feet, it says on the Sudbury maps.
Well, there's no need to argue the toss. Let's get on with our fowling before the partridge gets tired of waiting, eh, Doc?
Well, not today, boys. I've got things to do.
Oh. Well, we might as well get along. How's Irene?
Oh, she's never been better. She took the afternoon train to North Walsham.
To North Walsham? Well, there's no afternoon train to North Walsham. No more than the clay is only 18 feet.
Did I say North Walsham? I meant Norwich.
Oh, are you friends in Norwich, Doc?
Mrs. Slater. She lived next door when Irene was just a child, over on Victoria Cross.
Slater? Next door to Irene? No.
Oh, that was a long time ago, Greg.
Oh, well, I've been in Sudbury all my life, and I've known Irene all my life. Never any Slaters on Victoria Cross. Right, George?
Aye. I lived on Victoria Cross myself. Clay's 4 feet down there, same as here.
Now, let's drop the whole thing. Maybe the woman married again, and that's why you don't recognize the name.
Oh, well, maybe. Well, you better change your mind about the hunting, Doc. Your wife's away on a visit. You just finished filling a hole in the cellar and... Oh, good heavens, Doc. You didn't.
4 feet down to the clay, that's what it is.
What are you two fools talking about?
Oh, it's not that you didn't have provocation, Doc. We know that.
Provocation? Are you suggesting that you stupid fools, you go get the constable and let him start digging.
Oh, now, hold on, Doc. It's not as if we mind. If it could ever be called justified, This is it.
Aye.
We could have told you. I warned you about the bad houses to buy, not half I did. But when it comes to marriage, well, we all knew Irene.
The Sudbury baggage. That's what we used to call her.
And when a fine chap like you comes along and fixes to marry her, well, you want to say something, but
what?
But what, I ask you?
It's not like buying a house, it ain't.
I suppose I am rather old for Irene.
Well, you could be a young'un, it'll be just the same thing, Doc.
Now, not everyone wants the same thing. I'm a sort of a dry chap, and I don't open up easily. And Irene, well, you'd call her kind of gay.
Aye, that's one
She's
word.
She's no housekeeper, I know that, and that's not the only thing a man wants. She enjoys herself.
Oh, that she did.
And that's what I love about her. She's not very deep mentally. Well, all right, you can say she's stupid, I don't care. She's lazy, no system. Well, I've got plenty of system, enough for both of us. She's enjoyed herself, and it's beautiful and innocent, like a child.
If that was all...
But you two seem to know that there was more.
Why, everyone knows it. George, you just tell him what you saw at the pub.
Aye, you know me, Doc. I'm no pub crawler. I'm a single potter. But every night the past week, when I've gone in for my pot of ale, she's been there, and with that Harry Manning, the commercial traveller, who's been at the Lion. Everybody's seen her.
The village will be on your side, Doc.
Why?
And not that it'll mean much if it comes to a trial.
What shall I do?
Well, we all make mistakes, Doc. You know, in a way, we got you into it by not saying anything before you married her. And the way I see it, well, it's sort of up to us to help get you out of it. That right, George?
Still, there's such a thing as being an accomplice.
No, not the way we'll do it. When we came in here, the street was empty, wasn't it?
Aye.
And we haven't been down in the cellar. You get that, Doc? We shouted upstairs, but when you didn't answer, we went on after Partridge. We never came down in this cellar.
I wish you hadn't.
Now, all you have to do, Doc, is say that Irene went for a walk and never come back. And George and I'll say that we saw her driving away with this commercial traveller. What's his name, George?
Harry Manning. He was paying his score at the Lion this morning, so I guess he's moving on.
The old village knows about him and Irene.
What?
So they'll believe that she might leave with him. We'd better nip off now. We'll go out the back way. I'd cover up that fresh cement if I were you, Doc.
Aye, and don't be telling folks the clay is only 18 inches down.
The whole village knows about this. Oh, no. Why did they have to come down here? Why can't they keep their mouths shut? Why tell the patient he has a cancer? Why?
Hello, I'm back.
I'm down here, Irene.
Oh, can you beat it? I missed the train.
Oh? Which way did you come back?
I walked across the field, how do you think? It's twice as fast as the village. If you'll drive me to Colchester, maybe I can catch the train there.
Maybe. Did you meet anyone coming back?
Oh, no, sir. Oh, aren't you finished with that dirty job yet?
No. No, I'm afraid that I shall have to take up this floor again. Come on down here, dear. I'll show you.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Charles Lawton in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
There you are, Mrs. Green. Be sure you come back next week for another injection. We'll have you feeling fit in no time.
Well, how much will they be, these injections, Doctor?
3 shillings apiece, Mrs. Green. Now, there's no need to pay it right away. We'll see about that later.
Oh, now, that's just like you, always doing something for others with never a thought to yourself. You know, Doctor, I was talking to Mrs. Parks about you only the other day.
Oh, yes?
It's no good, I says, for a man to be living alone. Say what you will about it. A year it is now since that, she left you. Good riddance it was. And it's time you was looking about.
You mean to say it's really a year since Irene left? You know, the time seems much shorter than that.
You know, it's not that we owed with divorce, Doctor. But if there was ever a man justified, you're that man.
Justified, you said? You know, it's very odd how a word like that keeps being mentioned. Mrs. Green, I know that you mean well. I'd rather not talk about it, if you don't mind.
Well, a body can't help thinking.
Yes, I'm sure of that. Now, you come in again next week for your injection, and don't you forget.
I won't do this, Doctor, and you think I will...
Good day, Mrs. Green. Yes?
You the doc?
Yes, I'm Dr. Rankin. Won't you come in?
Yeah, don't mind if I do.
Now, what seems the trouble, Mr....
Manning, Harry Manning.
Harry Manning, your name seems familiar.
Yeah, I dare say. I'm a commercial traveler. Most of the boys around the villages know me.
And a few of the women, I suppose.
Well, I wouldn't say no, Doctor. You know how it is.
I suppose I do. Now, what did you say was wrong, Mr. Manning?
Well, I don't rightly know, Doc. Just feeling a bit under the weather hit me just as I was driving into Sudbury. So I looked for the nearest doctor, and here I am.
So I see. Well, I think I'd better examine you, Mr. Manning. Would you remove your shirt, please?
Yeah.
Have you been in Sudbury before, Mr. Manning?
Once a year, Doc, as regular as the calendar. It's a fine little place.
Did you say that you just arrived? You haven't checked in at the inn yet?
You're my first stop, Doc. Like I said, I was feeling a bit under the weather and I wanted to check up on it. You see, I wanted to look up an old friend here. I felt I'd better be feeling just right. Si, maybe you know her, Doc. A downy bit by the name of Irene.
Irene? I don't believe I know her. What was her last name? Would you breathe a little deeper, please?
You know, she never did tell me her last name. I got the idea she was hammered for proper.
Hammered?
Yeah, married. Didn't want her old man to know she was out seeing life. Oh, she was a real live chicken, a neat one she was.
I'm afraid that I never knew your Irene.
Well, I can probably find her by asking down at the pub. They'll know her.
No doubt. I imagine you're anxious to find her.
You said it, Doc. As soon as you put me to rights, I'll sign in at the Lion and I'll pop her out the pub.
Of course. How long has it been since you've seen a doctor?
Oh, 4 or 5 years. Aye. What you trying to tell me, Doc?
I'm afraid, Mr. Manning, that your heart is not in the best of condition.
Oh, are you trying to tell me that I'm going to pop off?
You might live many years, Mr. Manning, but if I were you, I would avoid any sort of excitement. In the meantime, I'll give you something that'll give you temporary relief.
You wouldn't be kidding me, would you, Doc?
Kidding, Mr. Manning?
You know, pulling me leg?
Not at all. You may put your shirt on, Mr. Manning.
How long have I got, Doc? Give it to me straight.
Well, that might be difficult to say, Mr. Manning. So many things must be considered in a case like yours. I would say that how long you live depends on the way that you follow my advice.
Oh, I'll do anything you say, Doc.
Fine. First of all, I want you to take this capsule. Here's some water.
Oh, all right. How often do I take them, Doc?
I think that one will fix you up for the time. If it doesn't just come back, I'll give you another one.
You mean that just one will do the trick? Say, that's great, Doc. How much do I owe you?
2 shillings.
2 shillings? Certainly reasonable enough. I thought it'd be at least a quid. Here you are.
Thank you. With that medicine to fix you up, Mr. Manning, you should have no trouble at all finding your Irene.
All right, that's the first portion of De Mortuis, starring Charles Laughton on Suspense from 1949. We'll get back to it in just a few moments. So Mr. Matenki's listening? Your dad's listening to the show?
Well, of course he's my dad.
He just texted you and said, I'm listening?
Well, what better can he listen to but us on the radio?
I thought he liked the Western. There's no Westerns tonight,
yeah, but
though.
He likes me.
He likes Have Gun, Will Travel.
He likes me.
Well, I'm
and
sure,
I'm on the radio.
I'm sure he does like
so
you, Lisa.
So it's all good.
Well, maybe we'll have to play a Western for him.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm hoping to get adopted by him.
I know. You have to keep working at
the
that
The adoption
a while.
Papers are in the works, I heard.
I you know, you never know what, you never know
I want to be able to
happen.
Go to Florida 17 times a year.
Yeah, well, you keep hoping.
Well, tell him I said hi and say hi to your mom for me,
okay,
too.
Okay, well, there you go.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Bill Curtis. Thank you, David Jennings. And thank you, Lisa Wolf and Lee Scram.
Wow, that's a lot of thanking.
That's a lot of thanks. Yeah.
And thank you, Carl,
thank
for
all of
being
our listeners.
You.
Let's name all of our listeners.
Okay,
a couple
you
hundred
start.
Thousand listeners
you
out there.
You go first.
Let's start with A for Adam. A or Aaron. A-A-R-O-N. Mm-hmm. Right, that'd be the first one. Aaron, all the Aarons out there, thank you. Adam would be next. All the
would be next.
How long will this take us? A long time?
Yeah, you
should
keep,
we,
you keep
should
going
we listen
with that.
To suspense instead?
No, you keep going.
All right.
Okay.
Let's get back to De Mortuis, starring Charles Laughton. Here's the conclusion to Suspense.
Are you busy, Doc?
Hello, George. Come on in.
Who was the bloke leaving your office before, Doc? He looked familiar.
It was a commercial traveller. He said his name was Harry Manning.
I could have... Harry Manning. He's the one...
I believe that he is the gentleman that you and Greg have mentioned several times.
What did he want?
A doctor, strangely enough. He wasn't feeling very well.
Did he know who you were?
That I was a doctor, yes.
No more?
No.
He'll be going straight to the pub, won't he?
I imagine he will. Although I told him to avoid excitement, he has a bit of a bad heart.
Aye?
Now, what's wrong with you, George? Or is this a social call?
A bit of both, Doc. We've been friends for a long time.
Ever since I arrived in Sudbury, I suppose in a way you and Greg are the only friends I've had.
That's what I've had in mind, I did. You see, Doc, I'm in a spot of trouble, and I thought you might want to give me a hand.
Gladly if I can. What's the trouble, George?
Well, money troubles, Doc. I have a lot of bills that must be paid.
If you're talking about my bill, George, you should know that I won't press you.
Oh, I wasn't worrying about that. The truth is, Doctor, I need about 100 quid.
Yikes. £100.
And I was thinking maybe you might loan it to me.
I would if I had it, George, but you know that I'm not one of those Harley Street toffs. My patients pay 2 or 3 shillings when they can pay.
You could raise it, maybe.
Perhaps, but I think that you could find a loan easier than I could, George. You've lived around here all your life.
Aye, and I know what I know. It's 4 feet down to the clay. That's what it is.
I see. You, Dr. Rankin?
Gregory here, Doc. Thought maybe you'd like to go out after some partridge this afternoon.
No, Greg, I don't think that... I might. I might at that. It'd do me good to get away from the office. And George is here now. Perhaps he'll go with us. Would you hold on? It's Greg, George. He wants to go hunting. What do you say?
What about my 100 quid?
Oh, I think I can help you, George. But what about the hunting?
I don't care if I do.
Fine. George will go with us, too. It'll be like old times, huh?
Good. All right. Meet at my place.
Righto. There's nothing like old friends getting together, is there, George?
Aye.
Especially when they can help each other. I'll get the money for you. Somewhere or other, considering the cause, I guess we might say that almost any method is justified.
See you, boy. Well, there's a bit of a chill today. Should mean a good bag.
You and George must have gotten chilled waiting for me. I'm sorry I was a bit late.
Oh, well, couldn't be helped. Yeah, what was the call?
Commercial traveler. He had a heart attack on the street.
That wouldn't be the same one that was coming out of your office today, would it, Doc?
Yes, it was the same man.
Well, fancy that. It'd be funny, Doc, if it turned out you gave him the wrong medicine by mistake.
I never prescribe mistakes, George. You, might as well let the dog go, Greg. We're coming to a good spot.
I'll bear off to the left. You two can keep to the right.
All right, boy. Flush him.
I'll lay you a quid. I beg more than of you.
Done, George.
Hey, Doctor, George seems a little nervy today, like he had the wind up about something. You got an idea what's wrong?
No, he seemed all right when he was at my office earlier. Hey, look, the dog's struck a point.
Ah, that he has.
I'll swing to the right, Greg. That way we'll have them between George and myself, and you'll have them in front. All right, Greg.
Flush him, boy. Hey, Doc! George!
I got two of them.
Doc, that first shot, I think it hit George.
What?
Good heavens. George.
Only $100. That's no cause to...
I tried to stop you, Doc. I could see your gun wasn't swinging high enough.
I thought I was aiming high. But I wanted to hit the birds before they scattered. God help me.
Oh, Lord. Look at the blood on him. Well, can't you do something for him, Doc?
Well, I'm afraid I can't help him now, Jim Craig. He's dead.
Sit down, Greg. I'll fix some drinks.
He was no more than 30 feet away. Just standing there waiting for the birds to flush.
I should have seen him.
Was that what you meant, George?
No, I didn't say that, Doc. No, I was just thinking.
Yes, I know how it is. Here's your drink.
Thanks. No, I just couldn't drink. Not yet. Doc, I want to ask you something.
Of course, what is it, Greg?
That commercial traveler who had the heart attack, the one that George mentioned, was his name Harry Manning?
I believe it was, now that you mention it. It was something like that.
Oh, I see. Doc, why don't you leave Sudbury? Go to some other village. England's full of quiet little villages where a doctor can build up a good practice.
But I already live in such a village, Greg. I like Sudbury, and I have certain plans.
But, Doc, it may be dangerous for you if you stay.
Are you threatening me, Greg?
No, of course not. Only I...
A man, especially at my age, can't simply pick himself up and start all over again. I've spent a great deal here, not only of money, but of myself. I like this place and its people, most of them.
I know, Doc, I understand, but...
As for the danger, I believe that I can take care of that. Oh, do you remember my cellar, Greg?
Your... cellar? What about it?
Well, it's hardly a cellar now. I've turned it into a research laboratory. It's full of the best equipment. Come on, I'll show you.
Oh, no, not now, Doc. Some other
now,
time.
Greg, you're my friend, my only friend now that George is gone. I want you to see it.
No, Doc, I...
Now, come on, Greg. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, you... What are you talking about? You haven't done anything to the cellar. It's just the same as it was that day. Here, I'm going to... Oh.
You're going to what, Greg?
What did you do? What did you stick with me with?
A hypodermic needle, Greg. It's an honorable symbol of my profession. And don't try to leave, Greg. You'll never make the stairway. Now, you see...
Have you... Kill me?
Not yet, Greg. Now, do you feel that I have to kill you, that you know too much and you suspect even more? You got too many secrets to keep to yourself. Is that it, Greg?
You did kill that commercial traveler, and then you got to worrying about what George and I knew. Mm-hmm. And so you killed George, and now you're going to kill me. I should have turned you in a year ago.
Yes, you should have, Greg. You see, there was water seeping through the floor. I did find clay only 18 inches down. When you came in that day, I didn't know anything about Irene except that I loved her and was happy.
What do you mean? You mean that Irene wasn't?
No. Irene was not dead then. You see, Greg, if anyone is guilty of murder, it is you and George. You killed my happiness. It was you who killed Irene through my hand, and it was you who brought up the commercial traveler. Although it was my medicine, it was you who killed him, as surely as if you'd struck him down in the street.
It was George.
Now, George wanted to transfer his secret to his wallet. And you, Greg, when the secret became three secrets, you found it too heavy for you.
Oh, you're mad, Doctor. You'll never get away with it. With all of us?
I came to Sudbury wanting to serve it, to share the sickness and the poverty as well as the simple day-to-day existence of all of you. I asked no more than that. I wanted...
Help!
Now, you quiet, you fellow.
Help!
I won't have you spoil things now.
Dr. Rankin? Well, he's you. There's no doubt about it. The door was open.
Unless he went out on a hurry call. Dr. Rankin, it's Constable Saunders.
I guess he is out. There's no great hurry on this anyway, Constable. Why don't I come back in the morning?
All right, then. Come along.
Well, it's all right indeed. By tomorrow morning when they return, there won't be a trace of you left, and I'll be free and safe, and no one will ever be the wiser. And what on earth's that?
I tell you, Jones, I saw the cellar light on just as we turned the corner. There. You see? The light under the door there.
Oh, right you are, sir. Must be down the cellar. Didn't hear it. Phew.
Dr. Rankin? Oh, glad I raised you, Doctor. You forgot to sign the death certificate on that commercial traveler today. I say, what are you doing down there, Doctor?
Well, you might as well come down the rest of the way, Constable. And I'll show you.
Thank you, Charles Lawton, for a splendid performance. And now here again is Mr. Charles Lawton.
I am very happy to have had this opportunity of working again with Tony Leader on suspense again. It has meant working in a story which has been a favorite of mine. De Mortuis has long been a well-loved story, but next week you will be hearing the story of a current novel when radio's outstanding theater of thrills will bring you Miss Jane Wyman. Wonderful. In a special adaptation of Pat McGurr's Catch Me If You Can. Another gripping study in
suspense.
Charles Lawton will soon be seen in the A&T film production The Man in the Eiffel Tower. Tonight's suspense play was by John Collier and was adapted for radio by Ken Crossan. Music was composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as James Mason, Van Heflin, Jimmy Stewart, and many others. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills. And remember, next Thursday, hear Miss Jane Wyman in Catch Me If You Can.
You'll find Autolite battery dealers listed in your classified telephone directory under Batteries. You're right with Autolite.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Ah, it's a good program there. Sort of a serial killer doctor, De Mortuis, from Suspense, February 10th, 1949, starring Charles Lawton. You know, he was Quasimoto, you know, for a while in the movies. He did that movie, you know. What the heck movie was that where he played Quasimoto? Oh gosh, with the bells, something of the bells. Oh gosh, what movie was that? I'll think of it.
I'll have to check.
Our listeners will know.
Yeah.
All right,
too.
That's Suspense. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Okay, we had quite a few people calling, Lisa. They said it was the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, I didn't know what you're talking about with the bells, so you sort of threw me there.
He was the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and he would gong the bells.
Just say it one more time so you can practice the accent.
I think we should do the whole rest of the show with an English Cockney accent. What do you think? What do you think, Lise? Can you do a Cockney?
All right, Gavner.
Oh, wow. Did you live there for a while?
Yeah, I did.
Ah, see, I could tell that was an authentic accent.
Well,
right there.
I've seen My Fair Lady a lot of times. I think that's like the same thing.
It could be.
Yeah.
We should try doing the show like this the whole time. What do you think? Governor? Or governess? Right? Governor or governess?
Governor.
You would be. You would not.
All right, love.
I people would be dial twisting pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm afraid they already are.
but everybody likes James Bond, shaken, not stirred.
Okay, let's keep moving forward here.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, we play classic radio shows here. Is this correct?
We do.
We play one classic radio show every hour, and we're on 6 hours a weekend. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. That's 3 hours on Saturday and 3 hours on Sunday. So we play six classic radio shows. However, Lisa, we want to give our listeners another classic radio show every single week. And you know about this?
I sure do.
Okay. You're looking at me very perplexed.
I think we're talking about freeradioclassics.com.
That's right. Free radio is good.
I'm on it.
Freeradioclassics.com. People are like, what is that? Well, guess what? It's exactly what it says. You get free radio classics when you log on to freeradioclassics.com. It's really simple. Just go to this website we've set up, put your name and your email address, and then click send, and you'll get a confirmation email. And when you click that, you will then be sent, sort of annoyingly, one email every single Monday from me. It could be a lot, really.
Well, the only annoying part is that it's from you. But the good part is that you get a free radio classic that you can download and play on your phone, on your computer, in your car.
Right. So they put up with me and you'll get a classic radio show.
Exactly. I do that all the time.
Yeah. And the cool thing about it is, you know, you hear the quality of the classic radio shows we play here on the WGN Radio Theater because we have the original master recordings of these shows and they're digitally remastered. And we send you a tremendous quality. I'm this word, I can't get it out of my brain. Tremendous. You'll get a classic radio show in really good sound quality. How's that? In very good sound quality sent in the email. But there's also a picture of the person in that classic radio show. That's kind of cool. You get sent the picture, synopsis, who the star is,
the original broadcast date.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little surprises in there.
Yeah, there is. So if you would like to get a classic radio show sent to you every Monday, 52 weeks a year, every year.
Lise, he's talking to you.
Wouldn't you like to get that, Lise? It's free.
Oh, my gosh.
There's no cost. And every week it's a different show. You might get Gunsmoke 1 week, then Suspense. You might get Abbott and Costello, Jack Benny, The Whistler.
My Favorite Husband, The Great Gildersleeve.
Boston Blackie, Fibber McGee and Molly. Goes on and on and on. You get something every single week, and it's free. You know, they talk about how there's nothing free anymore. No, this is free. So just go to freeradioclassics.com, sign up, and you'll get an email from me every single Monday. Hey, you know who's going to be here tomorrow, Lisa?
Hey, I sure do, Carl.
Hey, do you?
Hey,
I sure do. Horses.
This is Dan Jaffe, who is the CEO of Oil Dry.
Yeah.
Which is the parent company of Cat's Pride.
You know, he was at the Oscars. He saw that whole debacle
at the Oscars last week. That was last week's interesting conversation. We were on the air when it happened. So we were, I think, the first ones ever to report that. I'm pretty sure it was us.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll go down in history now for that.
That'll be us.
But Dan Jaffe will be here tomorrow, and he's going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter.
This is your last chance to send in a picture. We got a whole slew of pictures today. You still have about maybe 20 hours to send in a picture of you or your cat. Or just your cat.
No, it needs to be the cat. It needs to be the cat.
Yeah, just a cat. You send it to catspridephoto@gmail.com. All we need is your name, your cat's name, your city and state. We will draw one lucky winner to win an entire year supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, which is, of course, the premier kitty litter on the market, which is why we promote it here on WGN Radio Theater.
Yeah, I mean, it's not their last chance because we do this every month.
For this month.
But it is for this month, right.
Yeah, well, every month we renew this, so.
Yeah, so do get it in. Just take a quick snapshot of your cat.
Anyone who has a cat has a picture of their cat.
Oh, this is true.
So, yeah.
And email it to us here at catspridephoto@gmail.com. You'll be entered automatically into the contest. We take all of the pictures, put them in like a duffel bag, and Dan picks one, reads it live on the air. He'll do that tomorrow, and that person will get a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter, which is a great prize.
If you have a cat.
It helps if you have a cat. Well, you could use it for other stuff,
I would think.
You could put it in the back of your car, like over the tires, and then you'll get better traction.
That's a great idea.
Although Cat's Pride is half the weight of other kitty litters.
And
so
that has what to do with the tires?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, back in the 1920s,
yeah, How you grew up.
They didn't have front-wheel drive cars or a four-wheel, you know, all-wheel drive. They had, it was all rear-wheel drive, and you would drive your car, and it would slide all over the place. So we used to take, like, big bags of
salt,
and put it in the trunk over the back of the tires, and that helped us get better traction. Yeah.
So you're purporting that we should put Cat's Pride in the trunk of our car?
Yeah, but Cat's Pride is lighter weight, so...
So
it's better to just be a kitty litter with it.
All right, but
let's
go
do that. All right, in our next hour, we're going to tune into, I don't know how we got on that tangent. Next hour, Eve Arden stars as Connie Brooks, our Miss Brooks. And then after that, Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce star in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. So a lot more classic radio coming your way right here on the WGN Radio Theater. It is midnight. It's time for WGN News. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Here is David Jennings.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
12:08 on a... Oh, that just ends quick, doesn't it? Wow, it's shocking. It's like water being thrown on you, cold water. Right, Lisa?
You need a little cold water
I
in your
do,
face?
I do, actually. Well, you know, I took a nap. I took a nap today.
You need a nap.
Oh, yeah, I took a nap.
You get really cranky when you don't take a nap.
You know what? I'm wide awake tonight.
No cranky tonight?
No, I'm wide awake.
Because last week you had some cranky moments.
90-minute nap today around maybe 2 or 3 o'clock.
Do you remember what you did last week that was cranky?
What? What did I do?
Elif and I were upstairs and we were recording our promo.
Oh, yeah.
And you just finished it.
Left.
You turned around and walked
I
off.
Left.
And
well,
we went to look for
here's
you.
Here's the thing, folks. So we were upstairs doing a promo and the radio show was ending.
No, that is so. We had
and
10
I'm like,
more
okay,
minutes.
I got to get downstairs because when the radio show ends, someone has to say what that is.
Okay, in 10 minutes, the radio show was ending.
Well, I don't know if I like the way that sounded. Let's do it again.
You were just crabby.
I'm like, I got to go.
No,
see ya.
You did not have to go.
Got a radio show.
You did not have to go.
Yes,
let's be
I
clear.
Did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. All right. Well, that's your version of the story, and I have my version
well,
of the story.
Well, mine's right, though.
Right. It's right. Always, your version's always right.
Yeah, actually, it is.
All right, in this hour, we're going to tune into Our Miss Brooks, Eve Arden from 1949. You're going to love that. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars as an alien invader in the upcoming superhero film Power Rangers, a reboot of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Really? What did they win?
They will win a $25 gift certificate for Home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, Lou Malnati's.
I'll have mine with spinach on it.
Me too.
That's how I like
that
it.
That sounds perfect.
All right. So the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. I would definitely, well... Yeah, I mean, this girl is definitely an attractive woman, and she starred as Beth in The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Are you looking for something?
Is there something I should be looking for?
We have a lot of books, so maybe it depends on what you like.
This girl, this is the first movie I saw this girl. And then she became a big star. She's in a lot of stuff.
I think she'd done things before that,
well,
too.
Well, this is the first time I ever noticed her in anything, though.
Oh, she was noticeable.
In this movie. She was great in The 40-Year-Old Virgin. All right, if you know who that actress is, 312-981-7200. Win a Lou Malnati's pizza. We'll find our winner after your these words.
And we're back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play the clip one more time.
Is there something I should be looking for?
We have a lot of books, so maybe it depends on what you like.
That is one of my favorite scenes, although I probably say that about every scene in that movie.
Well,
it's
this
like
movie
my favorite
is pure
scene.
Genius.
Let's talk to Tommy. Hey, Tommy.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. I hope you're doing the same.
Good. Yeah, definitely. It's good to hear from you. And who is that actress that Carl is so excited to about.
I can understand that. That's the beautiful Elizabeth Banks.
It is Elizabeth Banks. And, you know, she's not only beautiful, she is so darn funny.
And she's super talented. And she's a director, and she's a great actress. Yeah.
She's in so many things, and she is always great. So, Tommy, you are a winner. Congratulations. We're so happy to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. It's home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, which you probably already know. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnatis.com. And Carl and I love spinach, just in case you were wondering.
Okay.
Thanks,
thank
Tommy.
You all so much.
You're welcome,
take care,
buddy.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For staying up late.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to all of our listeners for staying up late with us. We're here every Saturday and Sunday night playing your favorite classic radio shows. Jack Benny, The Whistler, Suspense, The Shadow, Fibber McGee and Molly.
And Our Miss Brooks.
And Our Miss Brooks. We have an Our Miss Brooks broadcast for you right now. And this was a situation comedy series. It came to CBS Radio in 1948. Eve Arden starred as ninth grade English teacher Connie Brooks. And she worked at Madison High School. And Gail Gordon was just absolutely fantastic in the role of Principal Osgood Conklin on this show. Richard Crenna, a good friend of mine, worked with him on a few projects, and he's been on one of our other radio shows. We interviewed him. He's no longer with us. But Richard Crenna played Walter Denton, not only on radio, but when this moved to television. Gail Gordon also played the role of Osgood Conklin on television. Jeff Chandler was the bashful biologist Philip Boynton. And this series moved to television in 1952. Very, very, very popular comedy on radio and TV. And we have an episode for you now from March 27th, 1949. This show is called Clay City Wants Miss Brooks. This stars Eve Arden. Here's part one of Our Miss Brooks.
Palm Olive Soap, your beauty hope, and Bluster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks teaches English at Madison High School. And like most other teachers, she tries to stay on the best of terms with her principal, Mr. Osgood Conklin.
This isn't always easy. You see, Mr. Conklin has high blood pressure, and it's wise to take him with a grain of salt. Of course, it's wiser not to take him at all. Anyway, on Thursday, he gave me a little honorary assignment to take care of on my own time, which consisted of a report he had to submit to the school board. I was to rephrase, punctuate, and proofread the 25 pages by morning. And sure enough, I got it all done by morning. In fact, when Mrs. Davis, my landlady, awakened me, I had been sleeping like a baby for over 20 minutes.
You seem all upset, dear. What's the trouble? Nightmare?
No, daymare. I was up all night with some extra work Mr. Conklin gave me.
Oh. Well, I guess you can use the extra money that goes with it.
Money? What money?
Surely there must be some compensation for working away from the school.
Oh, there is, Mrs. Davis. The satisfaction of a job well done, the thrill of helping my colleagues in their time of need, and the gratification that comes with the knowledge that I've assisted my superior officer on the battlefield of life. And you know something else, Mrs. Davis?
What, Connie?
The next time I work at home, it'll cost him a fin.
Well, remember this, dear. Money won't buy back your health and good looks once they've gone. If I were you, I'd flatly refuse to do any extra work at all.
Oh, but I can't do that. Mr. Conklin's my principal.
That doesn't give him the license to make a beast of burden out of you. Why, for 2 cents, I'd advise you to quit.
And if I had 2 cents, I'd take your advice. No, Mrs. Davis, even a beast of burden has to earn oat money.
Well, hurry with your shower, Connie. I've got a nice breakfast all planned for you.
Oh, I won't have time for breakfast today, Mrs. Davis. Walter Denton's taking me to school in his car so I can get this report to Mr. Conklin.
What's the matter with your car, Connie?
I had a little trouble with the steering wheel.
What kind of trouble?
It came off. It's nice of you to give me this lift today, Walter. And I'd like to compliment you on your promptness, too. You were right on time.
Oh, punctuality's a mania with me, Miss Brooks. Besides, if I wasn't on time, you'd let some other kid pick you up. Like I always say, the early bird catches the worm.
Well, Like I always say to the other worms, let's get some men and go fishing.
Confidentially, Miss Brooks, you look like you could use a little help. You seem bushed. Frankly, I think you're work happy, Miss Brooks.
Work happy?
Yeah. What did you do last night after you got home from school?
I worked on a report for Mr. Conklin.
Aha, I knew it. Mr. Conklin shouldn't give you extra things to do.
Why don't you tell him about it, Walter?
Oh, I'm not kidding, Miss Brooks. If you let him, Mr. Conklin will make a beast of burden out of you. You gotta put your foot down.
I may put all four of them down.
But I've been reading in the papers that there's quite a shortage of good teachers. You don't have to tow-cow to anybody.
I don't have to what, Walter?
Tow-cow. It's Chinese slang for polishing the apple.
Well, Walter, I don't tow-cow to Mr. Conklin. It's just that he's my principal.
Excuse me, Miss Brooks, but he's only your principal at school. After hours, he's just... Before I quote what I'm going to quote, I'd like to make a prior statement.
Proceed.
Well, any remark I make now is merely something I overheard in my daily contact with other members of the student body and does not necessarily reflect the opinion of the repeating eavesdropper.
Well, repeat away, eavesdropper.
I've heard sundry other pupils refer to Mr. Conklin as... Like I said, Miss Brooks, this isn't necessarily my opinion of him.
You've made that very clear, Walter.
Good. Well, some of the kids have spoken of Mr. Conklin as... After all, I go with his daughter, Harriet, you know.
Yes, I know.
It might not be the right thing to do, to talk about my father-in-law.
Walter, you're not married yet.
Well, that's right, too. Well, I've heard him called it... Gee, I wouldn't want Harriet to know about this.
My lips are sealed, Walter. Now go on.
Okay. Now, Mr. Conklin, in the eyes of some of the undergraduates at this high school, is nothing but a... Gosh, if I was Harriet's father and he was going to marry Harriet, I wouldn't want him to go repeating things about me. Then again, he'd probably be the first one to do it. Sure he would. So I'll tell.
Tell.
A kid in the cafeteria called Mr. Conklin a big inflated bag of ego. There, I said it.
Give that boy a new Nash and a pair of pajamas to drive it in.
You won't ever mention my mentioning this, will you, Miss Brooks?
Oh, of course not, Walter. I wouldn't even want anyone to hear me thinking it. Mr. Conklin may be rather a disciplinarian, but he does have quite a job on his hands, too. Running a high school these days is difficult work. Now, just between you and me, Walter.
Yes?
How would you go about deflating a big bag of ego?
Well, the first thing I'd do is not let him think I was afraid of my job. I'd walk in with whatever work I'd done for him last night, throw it on his desk and say, there you are. That's the last work I do outside of my regular school duties. Take it or leave it, Buster.
Well, that sounds like sterling advice, Walter, but there's just one more thing I'd like to ask you.
What's that, Miss Brooks?
If Buster decides to leave it...
Yeah?
Where's the nearest local of the Beasts of Burden Union?
Now then, Harriet, I want the furniture in this office to be absolutely glistening.
But, Daddy, it's as neat as a pin now.
Harriet Conklin, when your father and principal asks you to polish something, grab a dust rag, girl.
Why, Daddy?
Because Mr. Jason Brill, the principal of Clay City High School, is paying me a visit. You know how sarcastic and critical he can be.
But why is he coming to Madison?
Well, I'm not positive, Harriet, but I think the old pirate is here to raid one of my teachers. It's a deplorable practice, but he stole a Spanish teacher right from under the nose of Colton's principal.
But, Daddy, didn't you get our new math teacher, Mr. Fain, away from Clay City?
That, Harriet, is just a rumor. Mr. Fain came to Madison of his own free will.
You mean he joined our faculty before you gave him your own study at home to sleep in and promised him your car whenever he wanted it and told him about having all his meals with us free of charge and two movies a week thrown in?
Consider the subject closed. Now, if that Brill thinks he can sneak in here like a thief in the night...
I beg your pardon.
Why, it's...
Just call me Kettle. I'm the kettle that was being called black by that pot over there.
Now, see here, Brill. I won't... Oh, excuse me. That'll be all, Harriet.
Yes, Daddy. Goodbye, Mr. Brill.
Goodbye, Harriet. Poor girl.
What do you mean, poor girl? If you've come here to get my goat, Jason
Brill,
I'm...
Oh, on the contrary, Osgood. It's not a goat I'm after. It's an English teacher I've got my eye on.
An English teacher?
This is war, Osgood. But remember, you crossed my frontier first.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about Mr. Fane, a good, if flighty, math teacher. Okay, you've got Fane, but I'm going to get the best English teacher at Madison, Miss Constance Brooks.
Miss Brooks? What made you pick her out?
I'm attracted to her syntax.
Very interesting, Brill, but an altogether impossible task. Why should Miss Brooks want to work for any other principal when she's used to the benevolent, tender, warm-hearted guidance of a person like myself?
That's one of the things I'm depending on. Another one is a secret weapon, Osgood. You'll find out all about it when it's too late.
Secret weapon? What secret weapon?
It's a secret, Osgood. But believe me, it's going to work.
Jason, you're being absolutely childish. There isn't the remotest possibility of Miss Brooks making any such ridiculous change as you suggest.
There isn't, Dad.
No, there isn't.
Hey, look, Osgood, I don't want to be an old I told you so, but that's just what they said right before Jack Benny switched to CBS.
Come in.
There you are, Mr. Conklin. That's the last work I do outside of my regular duties.
Miss Brooks.
That's it. Take it or leave it, Bitbuster. I mean, sir.
They've gotten to her. Come here, Miss Brooks. Sit down by my desk, if you please.
What? Oh, but I've got a class soon, Mr. Conklin.
That can wait. You've been working too hard lately, Miss Brooks.
I have? That is, sure I have.
I don't like it, you hear? I don't like it one bit.
You don't.
We here at Madison don't want our teachers to overwork. After all, you're an educator, a person of intellect and perception, not a
beast of burden.
Exactly. Look about you, Miss Brooks. The walls of this office. That picture hanging there of Madison's first principal. Yoda Critch.
He certainly was.
There's more to a school than the people in it. There's tradition. A tradition of loyalty and industry. Good fellowship and cooperation. But mostly, loyalty. Why, when I think of our school song, it brings a lump to my throat. Oh, Madison, thou Madison, I love the air, thou...
Madison?
Thou Madison. Miss Brooks, come with me to the window. These hallowed walls, this lovely ivy-covered exterior. Do you know the significance of this venerable and beloved ivy, Miss Brooks?
Why, no, I don't, Mr. Conklin.
Here, I'll raise the window.
Here, let me help you.
It's caught in that scummy ivy. There we are. Now look, Miss Brooks. Look at this beautiful campus. As far as the eye can see, green grass. Now, there's one thing I want you to do before you do anything else.
No.
What?
No, I won't do it.
Won't do what?
I absolutely refuse to mow that lawn.
You know, if we were going to do a reenactment of an Our Miss Brooks, I'd have you play Miss Brooks, and I would have Roger Badish play
Gail Gordon.
Yeah.
Mr. Mooney?
He could do it. He could do the Mr. Mooney.
Roger can do anything.
And I play Walter Dent,
right? Really?
Yeah, he'd be great as Gail Gordon, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. You think so?
Yeah. Don't you think you could play the Gail Gordon?
I'm sure I could.
Does it sound like
It's my microphone. Sorry, someone had it turned around and the cable was ready to snap.
Sounds like you're in an airplane.
It's a squeaky door.
Sounds like he's in.
Same thing.
Yeah, and I would play Walter Denton.
There you go.
That's perfect.
And Lise, she would play Harriet Conklin, right? What do you think, Roger?
Yeah, perfect. We're there. So let's get the script.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Remember, we said we were going to do one.
We always say what we're going to do.
Well, yeah, but again, the boss downstairs there.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're talking about Carl, right?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Yeah. And Carl, too.
Well, that would be fun. We should do we could do The Shadow and Our Miss Brooks. That'd be a lot of fun. And then a little Bickerson sketch, right?
You know, yeah, you call me anytime. Let me know. Text me whatever, and I'll come on down.
I would definitely cast you as Osgood Conklin. You'd be great.
I would love it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. We have a quick break here, and then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I always get confused. Are you Lisa Wolf?
And or am I Carl Amari?
Which one are you again?
There's I told two, you, I don't know where you end and I begin.
Of the WGN Radio Theater, and I could never figure out. Around this time, I get a little confused.
Just around
this
time?
If you're Lisa Wolf or if I'm Lisa Wolf.
I'm confused, too.
Yeah, but I kind of think you might be Lisa Wolf.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll go with
Can
that.
Can I look at your driver's license?
I'm Lisa Wolf.
You're Lisa
Everybody
Wolf.
Everybody just wants to be me.
Everybody. I want to look at your driver's license. 1928? Wow. You're older than
I'm
I thought.
I'm old.
You're older than I thought.
Yeah, I'm pretty old.
All right, so we're here every Saturday and Sunday, right?
Yes.
I get here at 10. Lisa gets here at 10:59 and 38 seconds.
Exactly. And that's perfect because I can just
bulldozes
run right
her
in.
Way in and starts barking orders. Starts barking orders at everybody. Turn my computer on.
Right, Lise?
Right? That's about what she does, right,
She's
Lise?
Not talking because she
Lise,
knows better.
Wasn't she like, put my computer on. What's
Give me
taking
some coffee.
You? Yeah. Coffee. Black. You know?
If I drank coffee, I'd probably say it just like that.
Lisa brought in a really nice, what is this thing?
It's a vegetable tray.
She brought in a vegetable tray. Come on, have some. And Roger didn't want any. Roger ate what? One carrot?
He had
one
carrot
out of it.
I ate all the celery. It took
forever to clean out the carrots from my teeth, though.
You know what? I can actually see it from here, from the screen. I see the little orange dots in your mouth.
Wait, hold on.
There you
right
go.
Right up there, I got it.
There you go.
So, hey, Lisa and Raj, here's what Lisa Wolf does, right?
Yeah.
She brings this thing, she puts it down, and then she goes through and picks out all the carrots out of it.
No, the celery.
Celery?
The celery first.
Wait, hang on. She first took all of the celery out of it.
Yeah, I know.
Then she took all of the carrots out of it.
Well, Roger took most of them.
I only took two,
but I mean,
which was big for me.
She literally
That's a lot.
Hoarded them, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't like she ate one at a time.
Yeah.
She literally took them
But you know what
out.
I did? You I left what? The cauliflower and the broccoli for Carl, because those
he
aren't
doesn't
my,
like them.
He likes them.
Hey, Roger, but here's
favorites.
The thing. Yeah. It's like she brings it in, which is nice, and then she takes what she wants out of it first before she lets us eat it. I'm
well,
not sure.
Do
I'm
you
not
think
so
that
sure
she should have let us first take what we
well,
wanted?
I bought it for, we had a little party at my house for formal tonight. So we put out one of the
pictures,
that was one of the trays I put out and that one was left.
Yeah, Roger, by the way.
Wait a minute. We got the leftovers?
You did.
That's what you think of us?
No, I got more leftovers for tomorrow. I'm just rationing it out.
Hey, Roger, what did the carrot taste like? Because I didn't get to have one.
It tasted orangey like thank you.
I can still see it in his teeth.
Wait a minute. I missed one. But I'm telling you, honest to goodness, well, I was standing up here when I came in and I saw like five or six celery sticks on the tray. I looked at you for like 2 seconds to say something. I looked back down. Gone.
She had ate them all.
Gone.
Oh,
I don't think she's touched them. She just like inhaled them.
Two hollow legs. She can pack it away, man.
Celery is water. That's it. There's nothing there.
She has two hollow legs.
Carl brought some pasta. Let's
see
how he shares.
When I take Lisa to lunch or dinner or something, you should see this woman eat.
It just disappears.
Wow.
He's kidding. I am the healthy eater of the group.
Man, you should see that stuff. You know, that's why her last name is Wolf. She wolfs it down.
That's exactly right. And that's how Bill Curtis says it.
Yeah.
Wolf. Just like that.
All right. Enough fun and games.
We can't take you anywhere, right?
I know. That's true.
It's time for the conclusion of Our Miss Brooks. Let's go back to March 27th, 1949. Clay City wants Miss Brooks. Here's the conclusion to Our Miss Brooks.
Well, Mr. Conklin not only canceled all extracurricular work for me, but as we stood by the window looking across the campus, he actually bent over backwards to be courteous and sweet. Of course, he didn't bend over quite far enough. But it was a surprise to see him acting so human. Although I couldn't understand the reason for this unaccustomed solicitude, I didn't let it spoil my appetite. When lunch period arrived, I was in the school cafeteria with our bashful biologist, Mr. Philip Boynton.
Here we are. Sit right down, Miss Brooks.
Oh, thanks.
Have you got everything?
Modesty forbids a direct answer. Oh, you mean on my tray? Yes, I'm all set, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, good. How do you like what they're serving in the cafeteria these days, Miss Brooks?
Well, it'll never replace food, but it's improving. It isn't what you eat in a place that's important anyway. It's with whom.
What's with whom?
With whom you eat with. Whom. Or as I once heard another English teacher say, what's with you?
Oh, you're teasing me again, Miss Brooks, but I'm getting kind of used to it. I catch on much faster now than I used to, don't you think?
Oh, yes. You're really gone, Mr. Boynton.
Not till I finish my meatballs. That's another one of those colloquial expressions, isn't it? Gone. I wonder what the derivation actually is. How a simple expression like the past tense of go could assume the connotation with which it's currently associated seems totally incomprehensible at first glance.
Eat your meatballs, Mr. Boynton, before they get warm again.
Oh, excuse me, Miss Brooks, Mr. Boynton.
Well, it's Harriet Conklin.
Hello, Harriet.
Daddy wants to see you in his office right away, Mr. Boynton, if you don't mind.
And if he does mind?
Oh, please, Miss Brooks. Mr. Conklin wouldn't summon me during my lunch period unless it was something important.
I think it is. Daddy sounded very urgent.
Maybe some of that ivy crawled into his office. You haven't forgotten our date this afternoon, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, no. I'll call for you after school and take you to the zoo. See you at 3, Miss Brooks.
All right, Mr. Boynton.
Mr. Boynton isn't always as romantic as you'd like him to be, is he, Miss Brooks?
No, Harriet. Not always. Or ever, for that matter.
Well, maybe it's just as well. You know how Daddy feels about faculty members fraternizing. Not that I think Daddy's right. Sometimes Daddy can be pretty harsh. But then, if Daddy wasn't Daddy, what would he be?
Mammy. I don't know, Harriet.
I'm going up to the steam table and get some lunch, Miss Brooks. Can I bring you anything?
No, thanks. Run along, Harriet.
Okay, Miss Brooks. Poor Miss Brooks. She chases after Mr. Boynton just like Walter Denton runs after me. I beg your pardon. Why, it's Mr. Brill.
Oh, hello, Harriet. This is Mr. Hastings. Harvey, this is Osgood Conklin's daughter, Harriet.
How do you do, my dear? It's always a pleasure to meet a member of Madison's undergraduate body, especially such a charming and lovely one as yourself.
Why, thank you, Mr. Hastings. Golly!
Mr. Hastings and I were just talking, Harriet. We'll excuse you if you want to get to the steam table.
Oh, yes, Mr. Brill. Will I see you again, Mr. Hastings?
No, I would consider that a very fortuitous circumstance indeed, Harriet.
You would? Mm-hmm. Golly, I'll hurry with my tray and come back in a minute.
You'd better not walk backwards, Harriet, or you'll... She did. Hastings, it's marvelous. You've got something that makes women drop whatever they're doing and concentrate on you.
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Brill. I just try to be pleasant to everyone.
Uh-huh. Well, you keep it up. We'll have Connie Brooks in our English department in no time. And now, look, this is a good chance for you to meet her. She's seated at that table over by the wall, and she's alone. And don't tell her too much right now, but make an appointment for tea. Then we'll really go to work on her.
Well, if you say so, Mr. Brill, but it does seem like a kind of dirty trick with teachers so hard to get nowadays. I think...
Secret weapons don't think. They act. Now, there's Miss Brooks Hastings. Sick her.
Yes, sir. And when I bring her back and place her at your feet, I expect a whole case of strong heart. Oh, I beg your pardon, Miss Brooks, but may I introduce myself?
What? Yes, I suppose. Well, I'm Constance Brooks.
Yes, I know. My name is Hastings, Harvey Hastings. Are these chairs occupied?
Just the one I'm sitting in. Oh, I mean, help yourself, please.
Thank you. I'm not going to be in town very long, Miss Brooks, and I'll have to move rapidly, so may I take you home after school?
That's a little too rapidly. Just who are you, Mr. Hastings?
Well, I'm a sort of a friend of a friend of Mr. Conklin's.
He has?
I dropped over today with Mr. Brill.
Oh, the principal of Clay City High. What are you doing here, slumming?
Oh, that must be the famous Brooks wit I've heard so much about.
You can stop now. I have.
Seriously, Miss Brooks, I think that your undergraduate body is wonderful.
Mr. Hastings.
No, the kids.
Oh, the kids.
Great bunch. Your faculty's nice, too.
Yes, I still have them all.
Oh, the teachers.
Miss Brooks, there's one thing I just can't understand. How does a youthful, intelligent, lovely-looking person like yourself happen to be lunching alone?
I beg your pardon?
Didn't you hear what I said, Miss Brooks?
You lost me after youthful.
I just can't figure it out. All by yourself in this big cafeteria. Oh, a thing like this could never happen at Clay City.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Hastings.
Miss Brooks, I'm writing a book on the teaching of English in our high schools, and I'd certainly like to include an interview with Madison's outstanding authority on the subject.
Oh, an interview? Mm. Well, I did have a date this afternoon, but...
Shall we say tea for two at four?
Well, I guess so, but there's something I can't help thinking.
Oh, what's that, Miss Brooks?
Tea for two at four will mean zoo for one at three.
And that's why I've summoned you to my office, Mr. Boynton. Jason Brill and his secret weapon must be stopped. You've got to make Miss Brooks stay on at Madison.
But why me, Mr. Conklin? You know how timid I am.
Well, you've got to get over it, boy. You like Miss Brooks, don't you?
Oh, yes, sir, but what about your stand on fraternization?
I've reversed it as of now. Look, Boynton, all you have to do is act the way you really feel. Or better yet, the way you've seen other people act.
What do you mean, Mr. Conklin?
Well, you've seen leading men on the screen, haven't you? Humphrey Bogart in Knock on Any Door, Errol Flynn in Don Juan.
No, sir, I haven't seen those.
Oh, well, what's the last movie you did see?
The last movie I saw was called, I believe it was called Aerosmith. I don't go to movies much, Mr. Conklin. You see, I'm more of a radio fan. I listen to those mystery programs a lot.
Mystery programs, eh? Well, that's just as good. According to my wife and daughter, those private detective fellows are as attractive as any of the movie stars. Now, why don't you act like one of them when Miss Brooks comes around?
Me? Act like a private eye?
Certainly. From what I hear, most of them merely sit behind a desk until some beautiful girl comes in. Then they open the drawer, take a big drink, and then they say, "Come on, babe, we're going on a caper." Whatever that is. Well, I won't take no for an answer, Boynton. You've got to do it.
Well, Mr. Conklin...
It's for Madison, boy. Tell me that you'll try, Boynton. That's all I ask.
All right, Mr. Conklin. I'll try.
Come in.
Oh, it's me, Mr. Boynton. I'm glad I caught you before you left school for the day. I won't be able to go to the zoo with you this afternoon. Mr. Boynton, did you hear what I said? What are you doing at that desk?
Park the frame, baby.
What?
Stash it. Right there. Now, what's the caper, sweetheart?
The caper?
Now, look, I know the opposition's trying to put the heist on certain persons, but we've got a few angles, too.
Angles?
They can't get away with it, see? Now, we've got them covered like a bubble dancer in Boston, see? And that comes right for Mr. Big, see?
Thank you, Edward G. Robinson.
You've got to stay here, Miss Brooks. You can't leave Madison. I don't know what their secret weapon is, but...
Just a minute. Who are we now, Buck Rogers?
No, it's me, Mr. Boynton. That was just distilled water I drank.
Distilled water?
I don't know what Mr. Brill's planning, but don't you...
Then perhaps I'd better explain it myself. You'll excuse us, I know. The door was open. I believe you've met Mr. Hastings, Miss Brooks.
Oh, yes, I have.
This is Mr. Boynton, Mr. Hastings.
How do you do?
Hello.
We've got to get back to Clay City a little earlier than I'd planned, Miss Brooks, so I'm afraid your interview will have to be postponed.
However, I'm sure that we can take up just where we left off. We are all together in Clay City, huh?
Clay City?
Yes. As you know, a good teacher is always in demand, Miss Brooks.
Gabriel, you teacher snatcher. What has he told you, Miss Brooks? Don't listen to him. Don't listen to anybody.
Well, that isn't hard. Nobody's saying anything. What is all this, anyway?
Well, Mr. Hastings here is head of the English department at Clay City, Miss
Brooks. Aha! Then he's your secret weapon, huh?
Well, if you want to put it that way, actually, I'm a very simple man.
Yes, you are, in a jet-propelled sort of way.
Now, see here, Bill. I won't have... You can't do it. I'll have you...
Oh, stop puffing, Osgood. You've come to a station. What do you say, Miss Brooks? Would you like to transfer to Clay City?
Transfer? Well, come to think of it, I have been overworking lately. I might consider a transfer at that.
Oh, you can't, Miss Brooks.
Oh, why can't she? Have you got some extra chores she can do without pay?
How about it, Mr. Conklin? Any more extra work?
No, Miss Brooks, none at all.
It's very pleasant at Clay City, Miss Brooks. Say you'll come.
Say you won't.
Which is it, Miss Brooks?
Well, it's quite a problem. But now I'd like to ask a question, Mr. Brill. If I were a biology teacher, would you want me to come to Clay City?
A biology teacher? Well, frankly, no. There's no opening for a biology teacher.
That's all I wanted to know. Good day, gentlemen. I'm remaining at Madison.
Well, we tried. Come on, Hastings.
Goodbye, Miss Brooks.
Ah, good for you, Miss Brooks.
Old Madison, thou Madison.
As old as Thomas Edison.
Oh, hallowed hall.
Oh, basketball.
How short the day.
How short the pay.
When we've gray hair at Madison, we'll still be there at Madison.
Hello, Clay City.
And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, Mr. Conklin finally left us all alone in Mr. Boynton's laboratory.
Oh, gosh, Miss Brooks, you sure had me worried.
Were you really afraid I'd leave, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, sure, I couldn't even talk. I was so nervous.
You didn't get much of a chance. But now that we're alone, Mr. Boynton, is there anything else you want to say to me?
Yes, Miss Brooks, there is.
What?
If we don't hurry, we'll be late for the zoo. Where are you going, Miss Brooks? What are you doing at my desk?
Park the frame, baby. You're in for the caper of your life.
Next week, tune into another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Palmolive Soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler. Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Gerald Moore, and Frank Nelson.
Men, do you shave with a lather or brushless shave cream? Palmolive Shaving Cream comes both ways, and whichever way you prefer to shave, you'll find that using either Palmolive Brushless or Palmolive Lather Shaving Cream can bring you more comfortable, actually smoother shaves. Here's the proof. 2,548 men tried the new Palmolive way to shave described on the tube, and no matter how they had shaved before, 3 out of every 4 got more comfortable, actually smoother shaves. Get Palmolive Brushless or Palmolive Lather Shaving Cream today.
For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evenings over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamon speaking. Stay tuned now for Life with Luigi, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Our Miss Brooks, a terrific comedy series. It was on the air a long time, and they mentioned at the end there that coming up next, Life with Luigi. So you had a good hour of comedy there on CBS. I think that was Sunday nights, and they would have Our Miss Brooks and then Life with a Luigi. And this program of Our Miss Brooks was from March 27th, 1949. What a cast in this broadcast. You heard, of course, Eve Arden as Connie Brooks. Also, Frank Nelson. He played Mr. Brill, the competing principal. He was hilarious on that. Gail Gordon, Jane Morgan, Richard Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Jeff Chandler, Gerald Moore. Gerald Moore played Philip Marlowe on the radio. Terrific show. I hope you enjoyed Our Miss Brooks. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Look, Jeffrey, I don't want a partner. In fact, I don't want the father to be someone I have to see socially or who have any interest in raising the child himself.
We're going to take a call from Dee from Elgin. Hi, Dee.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. We're glad you got through. And who is that actress?
Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore is absolutely right. And we would love to give you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set, which is hosted by Stacey Keach. And it is terrific. I've heard many of them. And I don't know, I grew up watching the Twilight Zone TV series and then moved to the audio dramas produced by Mr. Carl Amari.
You know what? If it wasn't for the Twilight Zone radio dramas, we would have never met.
That is absolutely true. So yeah, they're even more special.
Because Lisa came to audition to be in one.
Yep.
I think you got into the show, right? I mean, did you win the audition? I can't remember.
Oh, I always win. No. Yeah. I don't know. I think it was of a general audition than for a particular episode. And I was in a couple of Twilight Zones after, so I guess I wasn't
like that.
So, Dee,
that's
bad.
How Lisa and I met. She came to audition for me for a Twilight Zone, and then we became friends, and now we're doing a radio show.
And now
together.
We're not friends anymore, but we work together.
Yeah, we can't stand each other.
I love the Twilight Zone.
So it's all about the Twilight
Zone. That's like a Twilight Zone story right there, right?
Yeah, you should start writing, Carl.
Dee, I hope you enjoy these episodes.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. All right. It's time for The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. It was a detective mystery series, of course. The character was created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, came to NBC Radio way back in 1930, starring Richard Gordon. But by 1939, Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce were simultaneously starring in a popular series of Sherlock Holmes movies for Fox and later Universal. And then they decided, hey, this is a popular thing. Let's put them on the radio. And you're going to hear Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce now in The Strange Case of the Demon Barber from January 28, 1946. Here's part one of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now I'm sure our good friend Dr. Watson's waiting for us. Let's go and join
him. There you are, Mr. Bartell.
Good evening, Doctor. All alone tonight, huh?
Yes, my boy, if you can call a man alone when he's got his pipe, his books, and a glass of good port at his elbow. Take your coat off, will you? Follow and join me.
Thanks, Doctor.
Help yourself to the port. There's some rather special tobacco in the jar over there.
Fine. And now, Doctor, are you ready to tell us tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure?
I am, Mr. Bartell, and I think you'll find it a most unusual story. It began on a winter's night in 1896. Holmes and I had gone to a theater in the East End of London to see a performance of a famous old English melodrama called Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
That's a good bloodthirsty title, Doctor. The Demon Barber. He sounds as though he specialized in close shaves.
Good gracious me, Mr. Bartell, that's almost unforgivable. He was a murderer of voracious appetite who placed his victims in a specially constructed barber's chair, cut their throats, and then pressed a lever that would swing the chair over and decant the unfortunate victim into a horrible cellar beneath his shop.
Glad this is only a stage play you're talking about, Doctor.
As my story begins, we were seated in a private box watching one of the closing scenes. Holmes was leaning forward in his chair, following the action on the stage with with an obvious delight, while I sat beside him equally engrossed. An actor by the name of Mark Humphreys was playing the part of Sweeney Todd, and no one could deny that he was playing it up to the hilt.
Where are you going, Tobias?
To the nearest magistrate, Sweeney Todd, to denounce you as a fiendish, cruel, cold-blooded murderer.
You have pronounced your doom. Into the chair with you, and over and down into the depths below. Ha, 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 there. But stay, whence comes this apparition? 'Tis the ghost of another customer of mine. The yawning grave yields up his ghastly inmates to prove me guilt. Blood will have blood. See, he is there. He comes to accuse me of his murder. Oh, save me. 'Twas not I that slew you. Let me leave, or it will kill me. Let me leave.
Well, upon my soul, Holmes, that fellow Mark Humphreys is the most florid actor that I've ever seen on a stage.
I find him enchanting, Watson. It seems to me he's really caught the flavor of this murderous monsterpiece. After all, a restrained performance of the Barber Sweeney Todd would be unthinkable.
Yes, I suppose it would. But I must say his makeup seems rather overdone. No barber would wear such an enormous beard. It'd be most impractical. Probably get in the customers' faces. By the way, I noticed from the program that Mark Humphreys, as well as being the principal actor, is also the owner of the company.
Yes, the current trend towards the actor-manager is a very healthy sign, I think. Come in.
Excuse me, but is one of you gentlemen Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I was asked to give you this note.
Thank you.
Now, who on earth knows that you're at the theatre, Holmes?
We'll soon find out. Ah, this note is from Mark Humphreys, our actor-manager.
What's it say?
Dear Mr. Holmes, I recognize you in your box. Please come to my dressing room after the performance. My sanity, and even the safety of London, perhaps, depends on your compliance.
Good Lord, my sanity and the safety of London. I wonder what on earth he means.
That, my dear fellow, we can only discover by going backstage to meet him. As it is, the curtain's going up in the last scene, I see. For a little longer, we must possess our souls in patience.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, sir?
Oh, my name is Lindsay, Derek Lindsay. I'm the business manager. Mr. Humphreys asked me to meet you at the stage door and take you to his dressing room.
Thank you very much. This is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
How are you, Doctor? Will you follow me, please?
Excuse me asking, Mr. Lindsay, but surely you must be related to that distinguished actor of some years back, Lytton Lindsay.
He was my father, Mr. Holmes.
Ah, indeed. The resemblance is extraordinary.
With such a heritage, Mr. Lindsay, you must love the theatre.
It'll probably sound like heresy, but I hate it. However, it's the only thing I was trained for, and there's good money to be made in it, sometimes. And money's a thing I both like and want. Oh, Mr. Holmes, I do hope you'll be able to help Mark Humphreys. He certainly needs it.
Oh, really? What seems to be his trouble?
Oh, he'll have to tell you that for himself. But his wife and I think... There's Mrs. Humphreys now. Maria!
Yes, Jerry.
Maria, this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Mrs. Mark Humphreys.
How do you do?
Oh, Mr. Holmes, I'm so grateful that you're going to see Mark. He's in such a dreadful state. There have been times lately when Mr. Lindsay and I have been afraid he's going out of his mind, haven't we, Jerry?
Indeed we have. We're both dreadfully worried about
him. In that case, I hope I can be of service. Which is his dressing room?
Number one, next door to mine. Derek, I think it'll be better if Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson go in alone. I'm sure Mark will speak more freely if we're not in the room.
I think perhaps that is a good idea, Mrs. Humphreys. We'll see you later on. Come along, fellow.
At your arm.
Come in, come in. Sherlock Holmes, thank heaven you're here. Close the door.
Now, Mr. Humphreys, this is Dr. Watson.
Watson, eh? Yes, I know of you, too.
How do you do, sir?
Sit down, won't you, gentlemen? You're wondering why I asked you to come back and see me, of course.
Naturally, sir.
Well, I won't beat about the bush and waste your time. I'll come straight to the point. I'm going mad.
Oh, come now, sir.
I know. It sounds fantastic, but it's true. I've often heard of actors beginning to live their parts off the stage that they play on it. Well, it's happening to me. I'm turning into another Sweeney Todd. The character I'm portraying on the stage.
Are you suggesting, sir, that you're a potential murderer?
Yes, I am.
What reason do you have for holding that belief?
Reason? Listen to this. Three times in the past week, I've wakened in the morning to find my boots covered with mud and my razor stained with blood.
Great Scott.
You've had no recollection of any untoward events during the night?
None.
Have you ever been addicted to the unfortunate habit of sleepwalking, sir?
Not to my knowledge, Doctor. And if I had been, surely my wife would have told me about
Your wife? Hmm. Where do you live, Mr. Humphreys?
We have a flat here above the theater.
Above the theater, eh? And Mr. Humphreys, you say that on three separate occasions on wakening in the morning, you have found a blood-stained razor and mud-covered boots. Can you show us this proof?
No, I can't. I was always so frightened that my wife would see that I cleaned them before she had the opportunity of finding them.
That's a great pity, sir. They would have been very valuable clues in a case like this.
I couldn't risk my wife seeing evidence like that. Doctor, she'd know the truth. That at night times, while she's asleep, some devilish, unconscious urge has overcome me. An urge that causes me to prowl the streets of London, razor in hand, looking for a victim. Mr. Holmes, you've got to help me. I'm certain that without knowing it, I've been committing murder, and if you don't help me, I'll go on and on.
Shh, Mr. Humphreys, please. I'll undertake the case. It's a very unique assignment. In effect, I'm being engaged by a possible murderer to prove him guilty.
Well, Mr. Holmes, I've been through all the records we have here at Scotland Yard.
What have you found, Inspector Gregson?
In the last 2 months, we haven't had one case of an unsolved killing with a razor.
Any mysterious disappearances, Inspector?
Bless your heart, Doctor. There's never a day that passes without one or two of them. Here's a list of them, Mr. Holmes, if it's any use to you.
Thanks. Come on, Watson. In the morning, we can go back to the theater and set our friend's mind at rest. I'm much obliged to you, Gregson.
Glad of your service, Mr. Holmes.
We examined the homicide records at Scotland Yard after leaving you last night, Mr. Humphreys. There have been no unsolved razor murders in London during the past fortnight.
And therefore, I think you may rest easy on that score, sir.
But it proves nothing. Remember that in the play, Sweeney Todd's victims are never found either.
Yes, thanks to his singularly horrible ingenuity in disposing of them. But this is real life, Mr. Humphreys.
Then how do you account for the blooded razors and the muddied boots?
Well, now, are you sure that they aren't just in your imagination, sir? You admit that your wife's never seen them. The whole thing could be, or shall we say, an overdose of Sweeney Todd?
Well, I admit that I'm suffering from a surfeit of that.
And why not drop the play from your repertoire?
Our manager, Derek Lindsay, won't let me. It's our best moneymaker, and he's always got a keen eye to business. Mr. Holmes, I can see that you still don't believe my story. So I've saved some evidence for you, evidence that I found this morning. Look at these. Now what do you say? Do you still think it's my imagination?
Great Scotter, blood-stained razor and boots covered with mud.
Splendid. At last, some real clues to work on.
How can you be so calm, Holmes? It happened again last night. Do you realize that I'm a murderer? I'm a menace to society? For heaven's sake, lock me up before I do some more damage.
No, sir. Don't get so excited.
Mr. Humphreys, I should like to take these objects back to Baker Street where I can perform some chemical tests. You have no objections, I hope?
Objections? Good heavens, no.
Excellent. You've told no one of this fresh discovery of yours.
No one. Not even Derek Lindsay.
Derek Lindsay, that's your manager, isn't it?
Yes. The best friend I ever had. Except for his father before him. It was Derek who helped me back on my feet 2 years ago. When I put on that disastrous production of Macbeth, don't know where I'd be today if it weren't for him.
You lost a great deal of money on that production, sir.
Nearly every penny I had.
Indeed. By the way, where is your wife, Mr. Humphreys?
She's in her dressing room next door. We have a matinee today, you know.
I'd like a word with her. Watch an old chap. Wait here for me, will you? I won't be a moment.
Right, you are, Holmes.
Oh, there's the Mike Costello door.
The door knob. Slam.
Oh, God. All right, well, that's the first portion of The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, January 28th, 1946, The Strange Case of the Demon Barber, starring, you know, I thought it was Basil. People say Basil. I know, but I think it's Basil because the announcer at the beginning of the show said Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce, but I've been saying Basil, and then people are like, no, it's Basil, like the herb, or whatever it is.
In England, the herb is basil.
It's basil.
You pronounce the H, too?
Yeah, they say herb.
The herb?
Mm-hmm. The herb.
So it's herb, herb Rathbone?
No.
Herb Rathbone,
you know,
and
Nigel
Bruce.
It could be pronounced differently
but it's
there
weird.
Than here,
yeah,
too.
Is that what you're saying? So over there it's basil, but then in America it's basil, maybe,
don't
right?
you remember we had...
Yeah, well, that's the same as,
yeah,
the,
we had that,
as the herb.
Do you remember we had that entire problem with biopic and biopic?
Yeah, biopic.
We had that same exact thing because it's pronounced differently here than overseas.
It's like Smith Smythe.
Yeah. So I say whatever you say.
Lisa Lise.
Whichever way you say it, Carl, I'm pretty sure that's the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah. If I say basil, it's definitely basil.
Yeah.
And if I say basil, then it's definitely basil.
You got it.
All right.
Tomato,
so,
tomato.
Yeah. The strange case of the demon barber. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. First, these words on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Is this the one where the music ends really fast? Yeah, there. Oh, ooh. Gosh. We got to do something about that. Who can we do? Who can we talk to?
Well, your producer's right there.
Yeah.
She's the best of
that
the best.
Music just ends way too. It's like, wow. Right?
Keeps you on
what do you think,
toes.
Roger?
That's,
did you
I
hear
think
that?
You should talk to Bill Curtis, actually.
Directly?
Yeah.
Or maybe
yeah.
we'll get... who's the band with the banjos?
The doodling banjo?
You know,
doodling.
ZZ Top.
Doodling.
Did you
meant
just say
dueling.
Doodling?
No, I said
you
dueling.
You said doodling.
I said dueling. D-U-E-L.
Roger, ZZ Top. Let's get them.
They're
to...
not banjos. They're electric guitars.
What are you talking
spin.
About? They have banjos.
What?
No, come on.
Carl.
Are you
ZZ
kidding
Top?
Me?
You're talking about maybe Back to the Future.
Oh, wait a minute. Who's saying the...
In Back to the Future, when it went back to the West, yeah, they had banjos.
Wait a second. There's a song.
I don't think that's
who
it.
Sings the song about where he plays the banjo against the devil? You know?
Oh, the devil came down.
Oh,
to
the devil
Georgia?
Came down to Georgia.
Who
yeah.
sings that? Isn't it? That's not ZZ Top.
No,
right? So who does that?
That's
song?
A great song.
Oh yeah,
several people do it.
So
I mean, it's
whoever
a
does that, that's let's get them. Okay. To do like a 5 second, 5, 10, 15 second piece to our promo, because then they could put that on their resume, right? Charlie Daniels.
That's going to get them gigs all over the world.
Charlie Daniels,
it?
Charlie Daniels. Put it on their resume, right, Roger?
I think it, and
well,
I played banjo
on the WGN
Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Lise figured it out. It's Charlie Daniels.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, it's a little Google search here.
Got that song? Want to play it a few seconds of it?
Devil Came Down to Georgia.
That's a good tune right
well,
there.
Well, just hear Roger sing it.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Just a couple seconds. Just a few bars of it.
Twang, 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 twang. It's a banjo song.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's words to
I like
it, but
the banjo.
I don't know the words.
I like the banjo.
Yeah. I'm a fan of
play,
that
have
song.
Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah, he's really
he's
good
a
at the
great banjo.
Banjo
oh, yeah, he's a great musician.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
There you go.
There it is.
That's a fiddle.
Oh, you're right. It's a fiddle.
It's a fiddle.
It's a fiddle. He's right. It's a fiddle.
What?
It's a fiddle.
It's a
what's the difference? No.
Same thing.
Ah,
exactly
fiddle, banjo,
fiddle
bass drum.
Fiddle doodling do.
Trumpet. What's the difference? It's a musical instrument.
Fiddle dee doo.
Fiddle dee doo. Well, she was right with the fiddle in the first place.
Oh,
full circle. All right. Let's enough craziness, boys and girls. Come on. Let's get this class back in order here.
Okay,
students.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Time for the conclusion of the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Who is it?
Sherlock Holmes.
You want to talk to me, Mr. Holmes?
For a moment. May I come in, Mrs. Humphreys?
Well, couldn't we talk on the stage? It's empty.
I should prefer to come into your dressing room, if you don't mind. What I have to say is confidential.
Very well, then. Come in. Mr. Holmes, may I introduce Signor Vanelli, our musical director?
How do you do, sir?
It is a great honor to meet the so great Signor Holmes. I have so admired you. Oh, often I have envied you. Many times I say to myself, Giuseppe...
Signor Vanelli, if you don't mind, I wish to speak to Mrs. Humphreys alone.
Oh, I quite understand. Excuse me, Signor. Adios, Clara Maria.
Mr. Holmes, I'm really awfully glad of this opportunity to talk to you. Tell me truthfully, please, what's your opinion of my husband?
I haven't formed a definite opinion yet. Except that it's possible that he's the victim of a fraud, I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
Of course not, Mr. Holmes.
Has your husband ever shown evidence of being a sleepwalker?
A sleepwalker? Oh, no, never.
I see. Are you a light sleeper?
Yes, I am. Exceptionally so. Why?
Oh, I was just curious.
You're being very mysterious, Mr. Holmes. Can't you tell even me what's going on?
I promised your husband the answer to that question before tonight's performance. I'm afraid I can't tell you any more until then.
Oh. And now may I ask a question?
Oh, certainly. Though I won't promise to answer it.
You said just now that my husband might be the victim of a fraud. What did you mean?
Again, I'm afraid that you must wait for the specific answer to that question. However, there's another fraud being practiced on him that I can speak of now.
What fraud?
The fraud that you are indulging in, Mrs. Humphreys.
What do you mean?
Of course, this particular fraud is none of my business, but when I almost force my way into your dressing room and find your musical director, the quantity of rice powder on one shoulder and suggestions of rouge on his cheek, it doesn't take a great deal of intelligence to deduce that your husband is being deceived.
Oh, how dare you! Get out of here, at once!
That's exactly what I propose doing. Good day to you, madam. No doubt I shall see you later on.
Well, Holmes, what does the microscope tell you about the mud on the boots and the blood stains on the razor?
Dropped on a blank on the mud, old chap. It's an extremely common type to be found in most parts of London.
And the blood?
I'm examining that now.
Well, this is as strange a case as ever I remember, Holmes. Here you are trying to prove a man innocent when he insists that he's guilty.
By George, Watson! Here's the answer.
What?
This blood is definitely not human blood. It's probably canine. Now, a Sweeney Todd madness would hardly drive its victim to kill dogs. Therefore, it's obvious that Mark Humphreys is the victim of a devilish plot.
And he's not a murderer.
No, come on, old fellow. We must go to the theater at once and give him the good news.
Why doesn't he answer? 3/4 of an hour before the curtain time.
Oh, he must be in his dressing room. I'll knock again. Come on, Watson, let's go in.
Holmes, look. Look, he's slumped over his dressing table.
Oh, I hope we're not too late. Here, give me a hand with him.
We are too late. His throat's been cut.
Poor devil. I promised him a solution to his troubles before the night was over. Little did I think that the solution would be death.
Dr. Watson, what happened next?
Bartell, I think I'll pick up the story exactly where I left off. Holmes and I were standing in Mark Humphrey's dressing room, looking with horror at the slashed throat of the actor manager. There was a bitter, self-accusing note in Holmes's voice as he said,
I promised him a solution to his troubles before tonight was over. Little did I think that solution would be death.
Looks to me as if worry over his supposed madness caused him to commit suicide.
Suicide? Rubbish, old fellow. It's murder.
But look at the razor clutched in his hand.
Undoubtedly placed there by the murderer before rigor mortis had a chance to set in. In any case, scrutinize the wound. Does that look as if it had been done by the hand of a suicide?
Well, I don't see why not.
Look closer, old chap. The depth of the wound is even, whereas a suicide cut always wavers towards the end. No, this is murder, Watson, and I think I know who did it. But I have little evidence. I must lay a trap.
What kind of a trap, Holmes?
I haven't time to tell you now, old fellow. Every moment counts. Off with you to Scotland Yard and get Inspector Gregson. Bring him back here as fast as you can.
Right you are.
And Watson.
Yes?
Tell absolutely no one except Gregson of Mark Humphrey's death. And say that he's still alive and well and that his problems are solved.
It's the performance of the play.
Don't you worry about that, old chap. Off with you to Scotland Yard.
I'm sorry it took so long to find me, Dr. Watson. I was out on another case, you
see. Oh, that's all right, Inspector. But the performance, if there is one, must be nearly over by now.
Here's the stage door, sir.
Yes, here we are.
Here, you can't go on the stage.
Who says I can't? I'm Inspector Gregson of Scotland Yard.
Oh, sorry, Inspector.
The performance is going on. I wonder who the devil's playing Sweeney Todd. Come along, let's stand here in the wings.
Quietly, quietly.
It was only the wind whistling through this cellar.
But this is impossible. There's Mark Humphreys on the stage. I saw him with his throat cut.
I don't believe in ghosts, Doctor.
Great heavens, it's Holmes.
Like that. Who's this? Ah, it's you, Mrs. Lovett. Somebody seems to have cut your throat. What a pity. No more veal pies. Tell Sweeney Todd who cut your throat, dearie, and he'll cut their throats, too. He'll revenge you while you burn down there in hell, dearie. He'll revenge you.
Here he comes now, Gregson.
Amazing disguise. I'd never have recognized him.
You're both here.
Holmes, whom are you up to?
Surely that's apparent. I disguised myself as the dead man, hoping to force the murderer's hand.
You're running a terrible risk, Mr. Holmes.
Part of my profession, Gregson. Shh, shh. Here comes Signor Vanelli, the musical director.
My dear fellow, I had to lead the orchestra pit to come and congratulate you. Never have you given a finer performance. Bravissimo, bravissimo.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. But it is true. You hardly seem the same person. Your performance... She is incomparable. Keep it up, Mark. Keep it up.
I think he spotted you, Holmes.
Yes, and I didn't like his look as he said that.
Well, whoever it is, they've got to show their hand soon. The curtain's going up in the last scene. Keep your eyes open and suspect everyone.
Look, my lord, Judge. He's by your side. Do not whisper to him. Your ermine robe is stained with blood.
Sweeney Todd, what dark deed presses on your conscience?
It was a dark, foul deed. But heed not what you hear, Lord Judge, nor what you see. Still the figure sits there. I feared it would come to this. It is useless to deny my guilt. The very dead rise from their cellarments to prove Sweeney Todd a murderer.
By George, what an actor he'd have made, Doctor.
Yes, what an actor he is, Gregson. I'll be hanged if I know how he remembers the lines, though, even if he has seen the play half a dozen times. Here he comes now. Bravo, Holmes. You did splendidly.
But it didn't work, Watson. It didn't work, confound it. The murderer still hasn't tipped his hand. Have I underestimated him?
Looks as if you have, sir. And if you don't mind my saying so, I think you'd have been a lot wiser to let me handle the case as soon as you found his body, instead of going in for all this... dressing up stuff.
Oh, but of course. Now I see it. Only one person could have killed Mark Humphreys.
Who, Holmes?
Do as I say and I'll show you. I'm going to Humphreys' dressing room now, alone. Give me a few moments' start and then follow me. Out of sight, but within earshot.
Dr. Watson, why does Mr. Holmes always have to be so blooming mysterious? Why can't he just say who the murderer is and take us to him?
Well, I've been with Mr. Holmes on a great many cases, Gregson, and yet I can't answer that question. Come along. He's got a big enough start now. Let's follow him.
I'm very fond of Mr. Holmes, you know, Doctor, and yet there are times when I get so angry with him. He shouldn't risk his life like that.
You know Mr. Holmes. He'll never change.
And if he don't, one of these days he's going to wake up and find himself dead.
Shh, shh, shh. We're at the door.
There's someone inside with him.
You devil, listen. Humphreys! How many times do I have to kill you?
Great Scott, it's Derek Lindsay, the business manager. Come along, Gregson.
No, Lindsay! You succeeded in killing Humphreys, but you won't kill me. Grab his arm. Look out for that razor.
Here, you.
Let go of me.
No, you don't.
Very neat, Gregson.
Are you all right, Holmes?
Perfectly, thanks, old chap, though I'm a little tired. Gregson, my dear fellow, will you take over from here? I think I've had enough melodrama for one day. How pleasant, Watson, to be back at Baker Street again. A crackling fire, my dressing gown, and your company combined to make a soothing ending to a somewhat violent day.
Yes, it's been a most unusual case, Holmes. I still don't entirely understand it. The original plot, of course, was to try and drive Mark Humphreys mad by making him think that he was a murderer. That accounted for the boots and the blood-stained razor.
Precisely, my dear fellow. And the killer, having conditioned his victim by this trickery, then murdered him, trying to make it appear a suicide. Now, who had a motive?
Three people. Mrs. Humphreys, her lover, Signor Vanelli, and Derek Lindsay. I must say that I suspected the wife.
Well, so did I for a while, and yet it was illogical. She knew, and we may therefore presume that her lover knew, that I was suspicious of her.
And she must have known that you promised her husband a solution to his troubles before the night was out. It seems highly improbable that she or Signor Vanelli would have faked his suicide at that point.
Quite right, my dear fellow. So I investigated Derek Lindsay's affairs, and I found that what Humphreys had referred to as the kindly act of a friend in helping him back onto his feet was in reality the mortgaging of his entire theatrical effects. Lindsay stood to inherit the theater on Humphreys' death. Therefore, I was convinced that he was the killer.
And then, after he'd murdered him, he saw what he thought to be Mark Humphreys on the stage.
Ah, that's where I was slow and stupid, old chap. I couldn't imagine what motive gave the cold, clear nerve to suppress all reactions when he saw his supposed victim revived on the stage. Only at that moment did I realize.
And what was the motive that made him hold his hand?
The characteristic that ruled his life, Watson. Avarice. A morbid love of money. You see, if he'd attacked me during the performance, he'd have had to refund the money to the audience. His greed conquered all other passions. It made him wait until the performance was finished before he attempted my life.
You know, Holmes, now that the case is solved, I'll tell you something in confidence.
Please do, old fellow. What is it?
At the end of the play tonight, I was afraid that you'd made a mistake, that you'd slipped up on the case. Gregson thought so, too.
And I, Watson, will tell you something in confidence.
Oh, what is it?
There were three of us that felt the same way.
Well, now you're being modest, no?
I assure you I'm not, my dear chap. In fact, in the future, if it should strike you that I'm, well, getting a little overconfident of my powers, or perhaps giving less pains to a case than it deserves, kindly whisper Sweeney Todd in my ear, will you? I shall be infinitely obliged to you.
Doctor, that was a swell story. And a pretty narrow escape for Holmes.
Yeah. He said he almost solved the case too late. Fortunately, it ended well.
Mm-hmm. The thing that sticks in my mind is the fact that this was one of the very rare occasions when Holmes almost made a serious mistake.
Well, we all make mistakes at times, don't we? Bartell, I said we all make mistakes at times.
I suppose so.
You mean to stand there and tell me that you never make a mistake?
Well, not when it comes to choosing a wine, I don't, because I always choose Petri.
Mr. Bartell, you trap me again.
Could be. Well, Dr. Watson, do you care to give us a clue about next week's Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Now, let me see. Next week, Mr. Bartell, next week now. Yes, I'm going to tell you a colorful story that took place in a Parisian circus in 1890. It concerns a very exalted personage, a lady bareback rider, and a strange death that struck without warning.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in this Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Yellow Face. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. For a solid hour of exciting mystery dramas, listen every Monday on most of these same stations at 8 o'clock to Michael Shane, followed immediately by Sherlock Holmes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes from January 28, 1946, with the case of Sweeney Todd, the demon barber, that starred Basil or Basil, however you want to say it, Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. That was based on the story The Yellow Face. It's heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System, sponsored by Petri Wines. I don't know if there's any Petri Wines anymore. I don't
no,
think there are.
No, it's Laura Petri now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All All right. You know what, Lisa? We're
what,
coming
Carl?
Back here in 20
hours. Yeah.
Like 21 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that?
Yep.
We'll be back here playing more classic radio shows. You want to read the listeners, the lineup?
Well, I know them by heart because I chose them. It's
right.
Fibber McGee and Molly, Inner Sanctum Mysteries, and, of course, Dangerous Assignment.
You said that so quick. You didn't even let it have a chance to marinate on the, you know, on your tongue coming out. You know, Fibber McGee and Molly.
You just like the drama, don't
marinate
you?
It a little bit.
We've got Fibber McGee and Molly, a good comedy.
Yeah.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries, always
a
good mystery.
Oh, that was
mystery.
Good. I like that. You enunciated the mysteries.
And then there's Dangerous Assignment.
Dangerous Assignment.
Ooh,
yeah.
Good stuff.
All right. So that's
that?
Coming up tonight. We'll
tonight.
Be back here tonight.
You know what? We should just sleep over. Bring a
just
sleeping
sleep
bag,
in the,
a pillow.
In the green room there.
And go snooze over in the green room.
Yeah. And
will
then...
you make me breakfast?
Yeah. Well, she ate some of my pie. I brought some pasta. She had a little of my
it
pasta.
It actually wasn't that good.
She didn't like it. Yeah, that's really nice. You know, I offer her some of my pasta, and then she's like, oh, really? Okay, I'll have some. It's not really that good, she said.
It was just noodles. It tasted like nothing. It just tasted like plain noodles.
Gosh.
I didn't taste anything.
It's the last time I'm giving you any of my pasta.
Fine. Be that way.
Yeah. All right, so it'll be nice to see you back here at the...
Yeah.
The legendary Radio 720 WGN. Dave Plyer's coming up pretty soon. Oh, I think he just walked in the door. There he is. He has, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but he has a really great actor on the show tonight. No, and it's not me, and it's not Lisa, but it's another Carl. It's definitely a Carl, though, right?
Carl.
Hang on a second. One second. Let's try this again. There we go.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Carl Grayson.
Carl Grayson, hey.
No, Carl Grayson's dead.
Do you remember he yeah. was the voice of Creature Features?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. There was two guys. Marty McNeely.
Marty McNeely did
it also.
Yeah.
See? He knows his stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I would hope so, seeing that.
King of worthless information, pretty much.
So you have a Carl coming on.
Yeah, Carl Weathers. So he's in the new Chicago Justice. So I don't know if you saw this on Wednesday, but they did this three-hour crazy crossover.
Uh-huh.
It was actually four shows. But they kind of somehow squeezed it all into three. And then Sunday night is the premiere. So that's pretty cool. Yeah.
And, you know, the creator, Dick Wolf, that's a relative of yours, right, Lisa? How come you're not on those shows?
Yeah, that's my dad.
That'd be great.
Wouldn't it be?
How awesome would that be? Yeah.
Well, don't say that. My dad's listening.
Yes, that's right. But, yeah, Carl, we got on. And then there's a revival of Annie's Cold Case Files. You know, the original, like the true story, not the drama, the actual... where they go behind the scenes of a case that's 30, 40 years old and try to solve the crime.
Oh, really?
Bill Curtis used to do the voiceover
for that. Yeah, with new evidence, right? Now they have, like, DNA evidence. Mm.
Exactly.
Stuff,
So there's a new
can
producer.
Can they find my bicycle that was stolen when I was 12?
They might be able to look
bike,
at that.
Yeah.
They're pretty in-depth. I mean, they got quite a team that they put together.
I would
what
like
year was
to,
that?
I was 12, 1975?
Yeah, Schiller Park.
Schiller
it
Park.
Was it was me.
It was
Did it have was a banana seat?
Was it a Schwinn? What was it?
Actually,
exactly?
Here's the thing. Real quick story here. So my birthday's August 20th. Mm-hmm. And around August 15th, my dad, I had never had a bike. I was, you know, growing up, we didn't have a lot of money, so
Same
I didn't
here.
Have a bike.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I finally, you know, I'm 12 years old. I'm going to get a bike, right? Mm-hmm. So August 15th. My dad brings home the bike and he decides to give it to me early because it's summer. He wanted me to play. And I would chain it to the fence at night. And on the 19th, it got stolen. So I didn't even have it on my
Did
birthday.
Did you chain it to the fence?
Yeah, I chained it to the fence. But somebody came and clipped it and took it.
We didn't leave.
So I had the
really,
bike like 3 days.
We didn't live in a community that was, you know,
bike,
known for
bike
crime,
stolen.
Though. You know, that stinks.
Did you have a bike stolen?
I did. It was
you could ride
it was
a bike?
It was yellow with the banana seat.
You could ride a bike, Lisa?
But I had bikes from the time that I could crawl.
Yeah, so I had it like 3 days.
That sucks.
Didn't even have it on my birthday.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a bike
It's obviously scarred.
Yeah,
he's so
upset.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to find it.
So we can see if they can do that. But no, what they've been doing is literally, you know, you think about going back 30, 40 years and you're interviewing family and friends. They kind of have to relive all this all over again.
Sure.
But they've had great luck in this series, like actually solving the crime.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if you've ever seen Forensic Files on Headline News or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's kind of creepy to watch it at night. It freaks me out. But, you know, they already know the ending of the story. They literally have to go from front to back in 1 hour and really 40 minutes without commercials.
Right.
And solve a 30, 40-year-old mystery. So it takes some time.
I think that's a great premise for a show.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, and it was one of their top-rated shows, and it's just been off the air for like 5, 6 years. So, and Danny Glover is going to do the voiceover for that.
Okay.
So that's tomorrow. And then there's this guy. We're just going to keep talking. There's this guy that fills potholes with mosaics in city streets. So he's been like aggravated by the fact that potholes don't get filled fast enough. So he's an artist. So he started this Instagram page. Literally, it's the Chicago flag with the word pothole written in the middle of it. And he goes and he fills them, and then he does these beautiful pieces of art.
He does it himself,
flowers.
Literally? He's got a lot of work to do then around my neighborhood.
Yeah. He's busy.
He's very busy.
He's employed.
But he was on CBS Sunday Morning, and now he's on the cover of Chicago Magazine. And he's a fine artist, but he's doing this just for fun. And he's,
you know, Dave, is it even legal to do that on a public street or public sidewalk?
No one stopped him. No one stopped him. You know, I think the city and him have never spoken. He's done, I think, nearly 100, maybe 100 of them so far over the years. And I think they just said to him at one point, unwritten in the Tribune, they're like, hey, you know, gosh, we appreciate his work, and it's really kind of cool what he does, but you should leave it to the professionals, because in most cases, he's got to set up cones, and he's standing in the middle of the street filling a pothole.
I'm thinking this probably is really kosher here.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, they look very cool. It's backor, BACHOR.com. You look at his work, it's
really
cool.
Maybe
my
bike's
cool.
in one of those potholes.
Yeah, it might have just got sunk in there. Exactly. What do you guys got coming up tonight?
Fibber McDoodle and Molly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like that show. Yeah.
It's kind of like doodling badges.
Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Oh, I love that show. Yeah.
And Dangerous Assignment.
Cool.
He's trying to be funny.
He's trying very hard.
Yeah,
trying
very sometimes hard. You try too hard.
But we'll be back tonight.
Have fun.
Yeah, we'll be back.
you have fun.
And I'm not going to let Lisa have any of my pasta. She said it wasn't good. I made some pasta and she didn't like it.
Oh. Carl shouldn't cook.
That's the real Italian pasta there. I made that from scratch.
It was Amari, great. I really enjoyed Italian. It. It was really,
it was
really
the real
good.
Stuff. It was like,
so
you know,
good.
It was a real thing.
Yeah, it was good.
Stick around for the real thing up next. Dave Plyer. He has Carl Weathers on the show.
Coming up.
I love Carl Weathers from the Rocky movies.
You listen
and
on
of
the
course,
way home.
The, and of course, he was in the Predator movie.
Yes, he was.
Gosh, with Arnold
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Arrested Development.
Yeah. All right, stick around. Right. David Plyer's up next. This is
Chicago's very own.